Conceived in Liberty, Volume 2, Salutary Neglect, The American Colonies in the First Half of the 18th Century, by Murray N. Rothbard. By liberty, I understand the power which every man has over his own actions, and his right to enjoy the fruit of his labor, art, and industry, as far as by it he hurts not the society or any members of it, by taking from any member, or by hindering him from enjoying what he himself enjoys. The fruits of a man's honest industry are the just rewards of it, ascertained to him by natural and eternal equity, as is his title to use them in the manner which he thinks fit. And thus, with the above limitations, every man is sole lord and arbiter of his own private actions and property. Indeed, liberty is the divine source of all human happiness. To possess in security the effects of our industry is the most powerful and reasonable incitement to be industrious. And to be able to provide for our children and to leave them all that we have is the best motive to beget them. But where property is precarious, labor will languish. The privileges of thinking, saying, and doing what we please, and of growing as rich as we can without any other restriction than that by all this we hurt not the public, nor one another, are the glorious privileges of liberty, and its effects to live in freedom, plenty, and safety. Alas, power encroaches daily upon liberty, with a success too evident, and the balance between them is almost lost. Tyranny has engrossed almost the whole earth, and striking at mankind, root and branch, makes the world a slaughterhouse. Cato's Letters. Volume 2, Introduction. The Colonies in the 18th Century. After the upheavals of the period of the Glorious Revolution in England, late 1680s, early 1690s, the American colonies had settled down into an uneasy truce by the end of the first decade of the 18th century. During the first half of the 18th century, or more precisely from about 1710 until the end of the French and Indian War in 1763, the colonies settled into a relatively stable society and form of government. Stable relative to the swift and dramatic changes of the preceding century when the American colonies were founded. The history of the colonies during this period can therefore be examined in a far more cross-sectional and less chronological manner than can the early century, or the dramatic and exciting pre-revolutionary and revolutionary eras that followed. But the first half of the 18th century was not only a stable time for the colonies. It also saw far greater uniformity between the separate colonies than could have been imagined in the preceding century. The diversity of religion, of motivation, of government, of culture, between the various colonies had been enormous. What possible connection could there be between the grim Puritan theocrats of Massachusetts Bay and the tolerant, pacific, and enterprising Quakers of Pennsylvania? Between the Puritans and the aristocratic landed elite of tobacco-growing Virginia, or between the Dutch in New Amsterdam and the Swedes on the Delaware. But the events and upheavals of the 1680s and 1690s had sown for the first time a firm thread of uniformity throughout the colonies, the common imposition of political institutions, a common relationship to the mother country, Great Britain. These common experiences were slowly but surely to weld a solidarity between these once totally disparate settlements, a solidarity that would ripen. Without these unifying experiences over the first half of the century, the united effort of the American Revolution would have been impossible. Politically, virtually every colony had a royally appointed governor, an upper house or council, and a democratically elected lower house or assembly, engaged in a quiet but critical power struggle with the royal appointees. Those colonies that remained proprietary, owned by an English recipient of royal largesse, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, were governed very similarly, the only difference being that the governors were appointed by a proprietor instead of by the crown. Only the anomalous self-governing colonies of Connecticut and Rhode Island were exceptions to this common experience of government during the 18th century. Another vital unifying factor was the spread of a conscious libertarian ideology throughout the colonies during this period, influenced directly by English libertarians who engaged not only in trenchant theoretical arguments, but also in a caustic and powerful critique of the political institutions within Britain itself. In the vital field of religion, the contrastic deistic movement and the Great Awakening spread throughout the colonies. If the result was a deep and long-lasting split between the rationalistic elite and the evangelical masses, still both movements served to unify the colonies by cutting across the previously disparate and contrasting religious passions of the separate colonies. Before turning to these common experiences, which tended to unify the colonies and which set the stage, directly or indirectly, for the new nation in the latter part of the century, let us turn to a rundown of the separate colonies, which, after all, were still separate and diverse in the first half of the century.